Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. Welcome to the Blue-Green Alliance conference call. All lines have been placed on listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for your questions and comments following the presentation. Without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn the floor over to your host, Ms. Kelly Swinghammer. Ms. Swinghammer, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. As Amanda said, my name is Kelly Swinghammer. I'm the Vice President for Communications at the Blue-Green Alliance. We're a national partnership of labor unions and environmental organizations working to create good jobs and a clean economy. Thank you for joining us today. I'm going to go ahead and turn the floor over to David Foster, the Executive Director of the Blue-Green Alliance.
Thank you very much, Kelly, and welcome to all of you on the conference call. This is David Foster, and I am the Executive Director of the Blue-Green Alliance. Tomorrow, President Obama will deliver his State of the Union address, while today the nation continues to confront the consequences of major weather-related events like Hurricane Sandy. As you will hear, members of the utility workers are still trying to repair the electrical grids in some parts of the region, not from yesterday's snowfall, but from October's superstorm. Last year was the warmest year on record, and more than 60% of our nation faced drought. Wildfires loomed up and down the West Coast, causing damage to our communities and our economy. Here in Minnesota, my home state, famous for its cold weather, we've had 5 rainstorms since January 1st. We can no longer afford to wait to respond to the threat of climate change. We can no longer wait to fix our nation's crumbling infrastructure. The systems we rely on every day are not prepared to deal with the impacts of these events. We must take on the threat of climate change, and we must do it in a way that guarantees 3 outcomes. First, reducing carbon pollution. Second, repairing our nation's infrastructure. And 3, creating quality jobs for the American people. Today, we're here to encourage President Obama to launch a nationwide effort to address climate change and create jobs. Here are 6 things that America can do to reduce carbon pollution, rebuild our infrastructure, and create good jobs for the American people. First, we can improve efficiency and reduce carbon pollution from power plants by moving forward with an EPA rule regulating greenhouse gases on existing power plants, as well as upgrading our transmission distribution systems across the board. Second, we need a dedicated investment in industrial energy efficiency and clean energy manufacturing in this country. We need to do this by fully funding the Advanced Energy Manufacturing Tax Credit. Third, we can update our schools, homes, and businesses to create energy savings and reduce emissions. And those updates will not just create jobs in construction, but also in the supply chains, creating the needed materials to do them. The President's Better Building Initiative is a good place to start. Fourth, America's century-old water infrastructure has been damaged by the extreme weather, age, and population growth. We must rebuild our water systems with complementary, sustainable green infrastructure that will create jobs and ensure clean water for generations. The Environmental Protection Agency should move forward with a strong stormwater rule and restore funding to its revolving loan funds. Fifth, across the country, our gas pipelines are leaking pollution into our air and water. We can correct this by fixing existing pipelines and improving oversight and implementing strong pipeline safety regulations. And lastly, America needs transportation networks that move people and goods more efficiently. Building a 21st century multimodal transportation system will ensure our nation competes effectively in the global economy. And we can start by ensuring the current 2-year transportation bill wisely invests across modes using federal procurement rules to strengthen domestic manufacturing while improving efficiency and strengthening the overall economy. We need to focus on new solutions such as an infrastructure bank that supports the long-term viability of our nation's transportation programs. So those are 6 things that the President and Congress can do immediately to move forward on climate change and create jobs. And now I'd like to call on Michael Langford, the President of the Utility Workers Union of America. Mike?
Yeah, thank you, David. Good afternoon. My name is Mike Langford, and I'm president of the Utility Workers Union of America. We have over 50,000 members, working in the electric, gas, water, and nuclear industries across the United States. From Hurricane Sandy to droughts that covered more than 60% of the United States, the impact of climate change and extreme weather to our community and our economy were profound. These events made one thing perfectly clear. The systems we rely on every day, energy, water, transportation, and communications are not prepared for the impacts of these severe events. More than 100 days since Hurricane Sandy, utility workers are still repairing and rebuilding the electrical grid in affected areas. Our members at New Jersey, PSE&G, meter readers, call center workers, are vital to the system's reliability and public service. The immediate aftermath saw more than 8 million customers lose power as a result of this storm. If you look at this past weekend, there's hundreds of thousands of people without power as we speak here today. One of the harshest lessons that it exposed the acute vulnerability of the region's electric and water infrastructure, and if you really think about it, the human infrastructure also. Since the storm, hundreds of millions of gallons of raw and partially raw sewage from impacted threatened plants have flown into the New York and New Jersey waterways, exposing flaws in wastewater infrastructure systems that could take years and billions of dollars to fix. Many of these plants are still only partially operational. The American Society of Civil Engineers gave our nation's wastewater management infrastructure a grade of D-. The Congressional Budget Office estimates the difference between current capital and spending and future costs, known as the funding gap, to be between $3 and $19.5 billion annually for both drinking water and wastewater systems. This amount of funding is required to meet standards of quality and to maintain and replace assets cost effectively. On another note, just due to the fact of inefficient water usage, leaking pipes, we lose an estimated 7 billion gallons valued at $91 million of clean drinking water every single day. You know, that's absurd. ASCE similarly awarded the nation's energy infrastructure a D+. Shouldn't we expect to be a lot better than a D or a D-? It's just, again, our infrastructure is... Improving our nation's energy infrastructure is critical. We can do this by modernizing our electrical grid to be more intelligent, flexible, and resilient, which are the foundational steps energy and securing the American's power supply. We must invest in the technology to generate clean energy and the capacity to transport the energy to where it's needed most. These initiatives draw on the massive American skilled labor force, creating good jobs that work for the 21st century. By investing now in our infrastructure, including energy and water infrastructure, we can cut down on inefficiencies, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, create good American jobs, and ensure that our infrastructure is reliable in the face of all the impacts of climate change. We must now start a national conversation about climate change and how to respond to this threat. We should take the 6 steps forward to protect our communities and our very future. We cannot afford to wait any longer. David, back to you.
Thank you very much, Mike. And now I'm happy to call on Kevin Knobloch, the president of the Union of Concerned Scientists. Kevin?
Thank you, Dave, and thank you all for being on the call. As has been noted, as Dave noted, we are coming off a year that was the hottest on record. But perhaps as strikingly, we are coming off a year, 18 months, 2 years, that has seen some of the most extreme weather and sea level rise and other climate-influenced impacts across the country. The extensive drought hitting 60% of our agricultural lands, the forest fires in Colorado and Northern California, arising in part from drier soils and pests like the pine bark beetle. Of course, the storm surge of Hurricane Sandy, which was exacerbated by rising sea levels. And the point I really want to make on this call in supporting this notion of a forward-looking, intensive investment in making this country more prepared for climate change, more resilient in our energy systems and transportation systems and homes and factories, while deeply reducing heat-trapping emissions, is that the country is ready. And this may be feel counterintuitive because it wasn't so very long ago that we were unable to get comprehensive climate and energy legislation through the Congress. But if you look across this country today, you see all kinds of leadership, all kinds of investment that have us poised to deliver on a deep investment in preparing for and avoiding the worst impacts of climate change. One piece of evidence is the skilled and ready workforce that Mike Langford talked about, that we have here in the U.S. very skilled workforce, and a lot of the skills that go into ramping up energy efficiency and renewable energy and strengthening our pipelines and our power lines are cross over very nicely from what we're doing now, whether it's industrial design, bending metal, pouring concrete. Secondly, you're seeing strong leadership at the state and local levels. You have leaders like Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker or Grand Rapids, Michigan Mayor George Hartwell, who are leading their cities in preparing for climate change and reducing carbon pollution. You see governors, Republican governors across the country who have seen the rapid growth of wind and solar, of those sectors during this deep recession, help pull their states out of the recession. The auto industry similarly has responded in part because of forward-looking fuel economy and tailpipe carbon standards, such that American consumers are now getting more choices and are responding by buying vehicles like the Ford Fusion Hybrid and the Lincoln MK3 Hybrid. And on top of all that, you have this terrific network of innovators and investors across the country that really lives within the technology labs and the production lines of our companies, our major companies, in the tens of thousands of scrappy young companies that are birthing and nurturing the next generation of technological advances in places like Silicon Valley, Kendall Square, the Research Triangle in North Carolina, and then in the scientists and engineers and designers who labor in our national labs in Boulder and Berkeley and Los Alamos and Argonne, and of course the capital investors that you find in every major urban center today. So this is something that's very doable. It makes a lot of sense to invest up front rather than continuing to pay enormous sums of money to clean up the messes after the fact. And we are energized by the president's recent comments on climate change from election night to the inauguration, and we are looking forward to him coming up boldly in his State of the Union address tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Kevin. And now I would like to call on our operator, Amanda, to open up the lines to all of you for questions.
Certainly. The floor is now open for questions. If you do have a question, please press the number 7 on your telephone keypad. Questions will be taken in the order they are received. If at any point your question has been answered, you may press 7 again to disable your request. If you are using a speakerphone, we do ask that while posing your question, you pick up your handset to provide favorable sound quality. Please hold while we wait for the first question. Our first question is from Andrew Rastuccia of Politico. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hi, guys. Thanks for doing the call. You outlined the six-point plan. Do you want the president to outline something like this in a State of the Union tomorrow, or would sort of a more broad, kind of general discussion about climate change do? What would a successful State of the Union look like for you guys?
Well, this is David Foster. Start off the response. I think we were all energized by the president's very strong statement about the importance of dealing with climate change in his inaugural speech. And we now look forward to the State of the Union address to hear some of the specific actions that he would take as leader of the administration, as well as some of the initiatives that he might challenge Congress to take up. So certainly among the 6 points that we laid out are combination of things that the president himself can directly initiate by moving forward with the Environmental Protection Agency on rulemaking, both as it relates to energy efficiency issues, the regulation of greenhouse gases, the issuing of a strong stormwater rule, all of which would be important, I think, in encouraging investment in reducing energy consumption and usage, as well as lowering greenhouse gases and improving investment in new technologies. So we certainly look forward to his spelling out some of those things that will be part of his important legacy as president. In addition, I think it's important that he challenge our legislative bodies to take up this issue as well and encourage Americans to carry on that kind of dialogue with their elected representatives so that they become part of this very important effort and refute the idea that Congress is paralyzed and incapable of acting upon the overwhelming scientific evidence that says this is a defining issue of our time and one that can be addressed and addressed well in a way that creates millions of jobs and economic opportunity for all Americans. Maybe Kevin and Mike, you want to speak to that as well?
Well, this is Mike Langford. David, I think you've covered pretty much what we're all thinking and talking about here. And I mean, even in all of our comments, we talked about the crumbling infrastructure and the fact that water's at a D minus and the electric is at a D plus. That in itself, I mean, you would hope we would be striving for an A plus, where a country such as the United States is almost failing in all aspects of their electric, gas, and water infrastructure. The president needs to put his emphasis, like he has in the past, on rebuilding the infrastructure and creating possibly an infrastructure bank to where these types of projects can get completed. But that's where I was hopeful for.
this is Kevin. I would echo that. And implicit in what we're saying is that because of the severity and the threat of climate change, we need to ensure that the climate impacts, that heat-trapping emissions are central to any discussion about any of these broad sectors of the economy in terms of transportation, infrastructure, agriculture, and so on, and that's certainly something the president, through his leadership of the executive branch, can assure. And if that happens, then we're confident that that'll lead us to evidence-based decision-making that will allow us to do everything we can to swiftly and deeply drive down greenhouse gas emissions.
Next question, Amanda.
The next question is from David Moberg of In These Times. Go ahead, David.
Thank you. Is there anything that you think is necessary to strengthen domestic alternative renewable energy industries like solar and wind power, in addition to the advanced manufacturing tax credit you mentioned?
Well, certainly, this is David Foster. Certainly, we saw the negative effects of waiting so long on extending the production tax credit and investment tax credit for offshore wind last year. There was a sharp decline in investment activity and manufacturing activity associated with the wind industry as a result of that in the last half of last year. Ultimately, that tax credit was extended for 2013 on projects that were commenced in 2013, even if they carry on into 2014. But really, the sensible policy is to do what our competitors in Europe and Asia have done, which is to put forward a long-term supportive renewable energy policy so that investors in both project development and in manufacturing have certainty on what the returns on their investment are going to be. They're going to have policy certainty and know that these policies will be in place for multiple years. So in 2013, Congress will have to take up this issue again because they only gave the tax credit a one-year extension. So we certainly look forward to doing that. Any other comments?
And as a reminder, if you do have a question, please press the number 7 on your telephone keypad.
David, I was just going to add that there's no mistaking the fact that the wind and solar industries have really performed right through this deep recession and slow recovery. And in terms of doubling in size, in terms of gigawattage electricity produced, in terms of jobs created, in terms of private investment attracted. And that has a lot to do with the fact that we have had 29 states have renewable electricity standards setting targets for new renewable energy and creating these markets. And the renewable energy production tax credits have really given these nascent industries and technologies a leg up in the early going. And so I would really point to that performance as a validation of this kind of forward-looking policy. What we need to get away from is this one and two-year sort of temporary extensions and turn it into a longer-term policy that investors and utilities and others can feel confident in.
Great. Next question, Amanda.
There are no questions at this time, but again, as a reminder, if you do have a question, please press the number 7 on your telephone keypad.
Any other questions?
We have
one last
question from David Moberg of In These Times. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, if you don't mind my asking another question. I wanted to just get a quick reaction from all of you, if I could, on the infrastructure bank and why you think that's necessary when so many of these types of infrastructure projects in the past have been funded with just public bonding authority without having to involve private capital?
This is David Foster. I think, in a sense, the proof is in the pudding that the public markets are not responding adequately and fast enough to the challenge that's in front of us. And state budgets, where a lot of the bonding currently goes on, have proved inadequate to raise the sources of capital that are necessary to create a climate-resilient infrastructure. And as a result, with private money at historic low interest rates, it has seemed like an advantageous time to test the creation of what amounts to a public-private infrastructure financing project to see if, as has happened in Europe, this is a sensible way to finance big infrastructure projects. I've certainly experienced the kind of oddity of sitting in a state like Minnesota, where we have generally cold weather in the winter, buildings that are inefficient and leaking energy out their doors and windows and rooftops all winter long, and yet the restrictions on balanced budgets and public bonding are not adequate enough to be able to capture those energy efficiencies, even when the payback in terms of energy savings would easily justify doing that. And as a result, budgeting priorities direct scarce capital in various sectors into markets where social needs presumably are more immediate and better, and as a result, projects that would help us solve questions of energy inefficiency or transportation inadequacies simply don't get funded. This idea has been tested in Europe, as I said, and has worked very effectively for quite a number of years as a source for financing big infrastructure improvements. And I will say, as I've been startled at driving in European traffic over the last 5 years and driving on roads that remind me of the infrastructure I grew up in this country instead of the pothole-ridden, dangerous roads, leaking pipes, so forth, that Mike Langford has talked about in the American Society of Civil Engineers has given such a dubious grade for. Mike or Kevin, either of you want to comment?
I mean, there's nothing really I could add to that, David. This is Mike Langford. Just the fact that, you know, you can see the tremendous amount of dollars that needs to take place, and in the public sector, you know, it just keeps getting hammered, and with the budgets, and, you know, and this stuff cannot just be ignored any longer. It's to the point to where the outages will continue to be more frequent and longer. You'll see more water and wastewater, you know, being misused in ways. And so, I mean, somehow, some way, we have to get creative. And I think the infrastructure bank is a way to get more people engaged and more people with some skin in the game and a workable solution to our country's failing infrastructure. So, I mean, Dave, you outlined it all really well. So,
no further questions at this time. Thank you. This does conclude today's teleconference. We thank you for your participation, and you may disconnect your line at this time.
Thank you.